Connecticut has two hearts beating within a single breast. One is collectivism, the belief in community that marked the early Puritans. The other is individualism, the belief in the pursuit of self-interest that we associate with the image of the Yankee. The Puritans who founded Connecticut were highly communitarian. As historian Dale Joseph Schmidt once wrote, the belief that the general welfare of the community was more important than that of any individual was the dominant force of Puritan society. The Puritans' economy was highly regulated. They held much of the land in common. The colonial government set the prices of commodities. A miller did not buy a waterfall, but received the right to use it by promising to grind the community's grain. Bruce Fraser is director of the Connecticut Humanities Council and the author of A History of Connecticut.
If you were a Puritan in Middletown in 1650, you were incredibly concerned with the well-being and situation of your neighbor. There was an intense sense of collective obligation there. And every time the Department of Tourism puts a congregational spire on some tourist document, whether they know it or not, what they're suggesting is that collective sense of mutual obligation, shared belief of mutual commitment that was the hallmark of the Puritans.
Connecticut gradually evolved from an economy based on communal regulation to Connecticut Yankees, known for their individualism and sharp business practices. Bruce Fraser.
We think of the Yankee trader, the Yankee tinkerer, the individual, the entrepreneur, the self-made man. That sense of ourselves, which is organized around entrepreneurship, around hard work, around seizing the main chance, those kinds of values are completely opposed to what we inherited from the Puritans. That was a great sea change in Connecticut history. Was that transition from Puritanism to individualism?
The best-known symbol of that individualism is Mark Twain's character, the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. He was a Hartford factory manager of mechanical ingenuity and skeptical turn of mind. But according to Matt Roth, a historian of Connecticut business and technology, Connecticut's reputation for industrial genius is less clearly a matter of individual achievement than is often supposed.
The basic unit of industrialization is not the brilliant individual. It's not even the firm. The basic unit of industrialization is the community.
Roth gives the example of mechanical button making in Connecticut.
In the 1820s, you need an awful lot of things to make a button. Okay, you need power. Maybe some guy that has a grist mill that's willing to take off some portion of that power through some sort of belting or gearing mechanism and devote some of that to button making. You need power. You need materials. You need labor of various kinds. You need many different kinds of expertise. If one unit, one economic unit, such as what we now think of as a firm, a company, in the 1820s, had to encompass all of that capability, well, there's no way they could have done it. I feel that it's incorrect, misleading, and perhaps even pernicious to think of it as something that an individual did. Or even a series of individuals. You have to begin to break down this view of individual actors and understand them as pieces of a community.
Whatever the reality, the value associated with individualism in Connecticut soared through the 19th and 20th centuries. Herbert Janik, a professor of history at Western Connecticut State University, says that it deeply influenced public policy in the state.
I think there has been a tradition within Connecticut of privatism, dealing with issues that in other places, say Western states, that have become the responsibility of the central, of the state government itself. I think in terms of education, for example, I think very much the attitude in Connecticut has been, well, the best students go to private colleges. The state system is just to take care of those who, can't make it in the private colleges.
According to Bruce Fraser of the Connecticut Humanities Council, the conflict between individualism and collectivism continues in Connecticut right down to the present.
We're caught between two different visions of what we are. Are we an aggregation of individuals whose agenda is to achieve success for ourselves? Or do we go back further into that Puritan past where we say this is a society whose agenda is to seek some sort of common agenda and to organize itself around mutual goals?
Fraser has no doubt about which vision is currently dominant.
What's the defining image of our Connecticut identity these days? It's the mall. That is the place that has replaced, in all kinds of ironic ways, the town green as the symbol of what we of what we believe, and what we believe is what we consume. The larger question that, that isn't answered at West Farms Mall is, what do we owe each other? And that sense of some other sense of identity that organizes itself around values other than our capacity to wait in line together to get at some sale is what's lost in that kind of emphasis.
While individualism may be a value that many in Connecticut share, it can also be an obstacle to building community, according to Trinity College political scientist Jerry Watts.
There's no vision that is generated in the state that kind of gets us together. Our only vision is, you know, you get some money, I'll have some money, and we can spend it wherever we want. But don't ask me to help you out. Because you ask me to help you out, then I'm going to retreat to my money, my private sphere. I'm going to go at it alone. That's kind of, you know, that's what they mean. That's that kind of steady habit state.
Watts is concerned about the implications of such an attitude in an era of economic adversity.
In times of affluence, we all can cover for ourselves in some sense. But during moments of economic stress, the state goes crazy because there's nothing that binds us together to struggle together. You will starve in Connecticut right next to immense wealth. It's a phenomenal state in that sense.
Is there a place in Connecticut today for the communalist values, like mutual responsibility and the common good, symbolized by the town common? Or are we content to have the shopping mall as the symbol of contemporary Connecticut? For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm Jeremy Brecker.